Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the show. So this evening, this is part two of our evening discussion. I want the co-host to focus more on presidential decisions that may have caused a general risk for Americans. I don't want you to focus on Americans who you think are a burden to the system. If you want to use that platform, you can do it on your own time with your own personal discussion. So I'm going to give you an example of what one president did in a difficult situation, and then you can comment on it. When President Barack Obama announced for a one-time gesture of releasing Iranian-born prisoners who were not charged with terrorism or any violent offenses last year, his administration presented the move as a modest trade-off for the greater good of the Iran nuclear agreement and Tehran's pledge to free five Americans. In other words, it was an exchange. Iran had a significantly higher number of individuals, of course, at the beginning of the negotiation that they would have liked to have been released. But in the end, he only released seven. So I'm going to describe some of the things they did to get in trouble. But Obama, the senior official, and other administration representatives weren't telling the whole truth. I mean, the whole story on January 17, 2016, and their highly choreographed rollout of the prisoner swap and the simultaneous implementation and six-party nuclear deal, according to the political investigation. In his Sunday morning address to the American people, Obama portrayed the seven men he freed as civilians. The senior official described them as businessmen convicted of or awaiting trial for mere sanctions-related offenses, violations of a trade embargo. In reality, some of them were accused by Obama's own Justice Department of posing threats to national security. By the way, none of my co-hosts have called in. In reality, some of them were accused by Obama's own Justice Department of posing threats to national security. Three allegedly were part of an illegal procurement network supplying Iran with U.S.-made microelectronics with applications in surface-to-air and cruise missiles like the kind Tehran test-fired recently, prompting a still-escalating exchange of threats with the presidential administration. Another was serving an 8-year sentence for conspiring to supply Iran with satellite technology and hardware. As part of the deal, U.S. officials even dropped their demand for $10 million that a jury said the aerospace engineer illegally received from Tehran. In a series of unpublicized court filings, the Justice Department dropped charges and international arrest warrants against 14 other men, all of who were fugitives. The administration didn't disclose their names or what they were accused of doing, noting only in an unattributed 152-word statement about the swap that the U.S. also removed any Interpol notices and dismissed any charges against 14 Iranians for whom it was assessed that their extradition requests were unlikely to be successful. Three of the fugitives allegedly sought to lease Boeing aircraft for an Iranian airline that authorities said supported Hezbollah, the U.S. designated terrorism organization. A fourth, Behrous Dolatze, was charged with conspiring to buy thousands of U.S.-made assault rifles and illegally import them into Iran. Okay, folks, nobody called in, so I'm playing a song. Hi, we have Ben on the line, and I'm going to repeat to Ben what I was discussing. By the way, Ben, Don is Ubering, and he thinks he might be able to call back in, and it looks like John may not. I don't know, but I was trying to get you guys to weigh in on more narrow examples of what president decisions you thought were successful versus not, and I ran across this article on Politico where President Obama announced in his Iranian trade deal, they exchanged prisoners. The Iranians released 5 Americans and we released 7. And most of their violations had to do with like trying to sneak in information to Iran, like satellite information and things that would help their technology. One of the persons who was released by Obama was illegally procuring a network supplying Iran with U.S.-made microelectronics, which applications were made in surface-to-air missiles. So, and another one tried to sneak something else, and then 14 other people that were never pursued by the Justice Department. One was trying to attempt to rent Boeing jets in order to transport some assault rifles and other equipment to Iran. So this is my basic question. Obama released 7 people who were involved and held in U.S. prisons for a series of 8 to 20 years, people who stole or tried to procure satellite technology. There was other microelectronic devices, and 14 who they were going to prosecute never got prosecuted because of the Iranian trade deal. Now, I think Obama's Iranian deal to defuse nuclear weaponry was one of his most controversial, and that's what I was trying to get at tonight before the our conversations all got a little out of control. What do you think of that?
Well, I vehemently disagreed with the Obama Iran deal because I understand Boeing and I understand that we haven't traded with Iran because we have differing opinions on basic things. So when Obama made the Iran deal with the airplanes and the prisoners, the media didn't really tell us that it was a prisoner for cash deal along with airplanes. They basically just said the Iran nuclear deal, but it also had to do with lots of Boeing planes and lots of Airbus planes. So
yeah, I guess what my main point was this: you disagreed with the dynamics. Well, I have 2 questions for you. The first question is countries that have been estranged from us for so long, like North Korea and Iran, how do we get them back to the center and out of the potential danger? Like, is there any chance, or is their credo and their intent to like to destroy Israel in Iran's case too enmeshed, and also their goals with Russia? And my second question is by Obama trying to make that nuclear diffusion deal so there would be more harmony between the countries, did he go about it wrong, or what could he have done better?
Well, I don't know how I'm supposed to answer if he went about it wrong, because I don't know who was the co-signer of that deal. Did he and Iran come up with that deal just on their own, or was it part of Congress's?
I think his
problem?
Administration, the thing was, is Iran was complaining a lot of of having a trade embargo that extended over 20 years, and at times were better and at times worse, but they wanted to cut a deal with the Americans because they didn't want to be isolated forever. And so they agreed to decrease their nuclear policy in exchange for some cooperation between both governments.
Well, I don't believe that for a second.
So I think it was Obama's brainchild.
I don't believe that at all, because once a country becomes nuclear, that means that they have scientists that have figured out how to become nuclear. That doesn't make them stop creating or knowing how to create bombs overnight. That just means that they signed a paper that says they won't. That doesn't mean that we get to see everything that they're doing.
But did respect Obama. The average citizen in Iran respected Obama more for at least trying to deal with their country.
Well, that's nice. That doesn't mean much to me as a citizen.
I'm not saying it's consequential,
here.
But I know. But okay, the thing is. What George W. Bush called the Axis of Evil, North Korea, Iran, and for some reason I can't think of the third one. Probably he's probably talking about
Russia.
He probably is trying to, or the Hezbollah. No, it was a smaller group. It was like the Hezbollah or Yasser Arafat or whoever his successor was. But the fact of the matter is Obama was trying to strike a deal with them. And they did have to compromise on both sides. But
as far as Bush goes, I don't believe what Bush, his presidency, did. I don't take every word as a fact, because as far as 9/11 went, that was the worst thing to our freedoms in hundreds of years. The Patriot Act was anything but a Patriot Act. It was called the Patriot Act so people wouldn't question it so much. But as far as 9/11, there was too many questions that went unanswered. As far as like Building 7 came down, you know, there was things that have never been answered, and everybody just says, it was terrorism, shut up. So I don't believe anything Bush said. I don't believe anything Obama said, because Obama didn't question any of it either.
Well,
what do you think?
For once, that was a far-reaching act, because it also had to do with bank policies, opening accounts. One of my friend's account got frozen. She was in the movie industry because she had made a cash deposit of $5,000, and the feds went in there and intervened, and she wasn't even, you know, a threat to Americans. And that policy was pretty far-reaching.
Right, and 5 years before that, 6 years before that, the Anti-Terrorist and Effective Death Penalty Act of 95, I think it was the precursor to the Patriot Act, which was basically the same thing except less words. And they had years to figure out how to improve that measure. And I disagree with both of them, because that basically wipes out our Fourth Amendment, period. They can come and pick you up for any reason whatsoever now. And it has nothing to do with the Fourth Amendment anymore. I mean, you cannot use that argument in court if you were picked up on either of those acts. You know?
Isn't that having to do with search and seizures, too? The Fourth Amendment?
Yeah. Yeah, it does.
During that midterm, Bush took office in 2000, and there was a lot of outcry I remember in the midterm election about the FISA courts and the procedures regarding the Patriot Act. But in the end, they were highly ignored, the citizen complaints.
Well, I don't consider the Bush administration as a conservative administration. So if anybody ever accuses me of being a conservative and then trying to tie that together with anything that the Bush Jr. did, that it doesn't make sense to me, because as far as my lifetime, Bush and Obama, Clinton, Bush, and Obama didn't make any kind of sense to me at all. All three of them, they might as well have been on the same party. So I,
why
know,
would
I
you say that about
that.
Bush?
Bush? Because there were so many unanswered questions about 9/11 and so many Texas values, as you know, quote, quote, that got destroyed during his administration.
Yeah, one thing I want to point out is that I'm losing my train of thought now, because it had to do with the Patriot Act. Just keep talking till I think of it. It was something pretty important.
Well,
I did two or three shows on the FISA courts, the Federal Intelligence Surveillance Court. And they do, most of the more intense situations are handled only by that court in secret. So there's a lot of stuff that the American public doesn't even know about regarding the FISA courts.
Yeah, that's because they don't get the opportunity to ask questions about it. And the news will never tell you what happens, because they don't get to know. Even if it's, you know, nowadays you get a bunch of information from the news that might or might not be even real. But, you know, with stuff like that you're talking about, they don't even bring it up. They don't give you one way or the other to interpret.
Well, part of the problem is I remember at that time, I do remember a few things now. There were two cell phone services that decided to comply with the federal government, go behind customers' back and gather data without customer consent. So that was one of the facts.
Right, and
one of the questions about 9/11 was the fact that they had several warnings on different levels, and nobody did anything about the potentiality of those 19 people who got in the planes and brought them down. Like, there wasn't adequate follow-up for any of that. I remember being on one show when two people came over from, two Middle Easterners came over from Thailand, and both the NSA and the FBI had records on them, but they were a mile from the NSA headquarters, and they weren't tracked, and they ended up being two of the hijackers.
Right, and I don't believe anything about the whole story. It doesn't matter what kind of facts were presented anymore, because the whole narrative is, it doesn't make sense to me. So the way the buildings came down.
But do you really think our government sabotaged us?
I have no idea. I have no idea what to believe as far as 2001 was concerned whatsoever. There's no way I can make a comprehensive argument either way, because Building 7 was a huge question mark for me, because that building was sitting there. It didn't get hit by anything. It just pummeled into dust. And nobody's explained that to me at all. So anything that had to do with terrorism or passports or whatever was found in the wreckage, none of that makes sense, because all the wreckage was shipped off to a place you can't go and look anyway in a hurry.
I agree. I know there was Jesse Ventura brought it in his show on True TV about how some of the stuff was stored and how there was controversy regarding it.
And the most devastating thing about the whole story is that anybody that has a question about it, they get labeled right away as a tinfoil hat kind of person. And, you know, that's like an easy, lazy way to shut somebody up and say, oh, you're crazy. You're a tinfoil hat person if you don't believe that it was terrorism. Well, nobody ever proved anything about terrorism. There was no proof of any of that. Anything to get us into a war, anything.
What
do
you mean?
Any kind of country. Well, where did the proof take us to Afghanistan or Iraq? What proof gave us the, you know, why did we go to Iraq or Afghanistan as far as the Twin Towers and Building 7 coming down?
Well, it was proven that Saddam Hussein was not a direct participant in anything that had to do with 9/11. And that was proven.
Well, yeah, but we fought and we captured his city and we took him based on what evidence in the first place? I'm not sticking up for him at all because I don't know anything about him. All I know is that we got him, we fought, we lost our troops, they lost theirs. But what led us to go there that had anything to do with 9/11?
George Bush and Cheney tried to parallel it, like that they had some kind of regional goal to take down America. But to tell you the truth, I'm not prepared to answer that tonight. I'm just mad at our co-host who all... go ahead. Could you explain something for a minute? Because I got to check John and Albert.
Sure.
Go ahead.
Oh, okay, yeah. So as far as that argument goes, we decided the Middle East was basically counterbalanced with each other. It was a yin and yang situation. There was a powerhouse in Iran, a powerhouse in Iraq, and they basically stabilized each other. As bad as they were, we decided to go after one. Based on what? I know we gained from it.
Well, now Don,
we lost.
Don's on the line, at least. Could you repeat your last statement? Because I had to text somebody.
All right. What I said was, after 9/11, no matter what the narrative said, there was in the Middle East, there was a yin and yang situation. It was counterbalanced with each other. Iran and Iraq were basically two powerhouses in a deadlock. And we decided to go after one and take it down. And then we pulled out. And, of course, what do you think happens? It destabilizes. But
well, I do
I'm
have a background on that.
There.
In the Iraq-Iran war, we supplied the Iraqis. And over 500,000 died on both sides. Now, that was
right,
in that 10-year war. But then in our new war, that's right. But in the new war that started March 20th, 2003, Bush and Cheney tried to coin that country as being in collusion with the hijackers. But there were coalition troops. Over 160,000 of them. It lasted from March. Their first battle was 1 month, and they annihilated the country in a short period. 36 countries were involved in the cleanup. 100,000 troops were assembled in Kuwait by February before George Bush Jr. even got the AOK to go into the battle. So I just think that they saw it as a larger global regional threat. And I heard that Cheney had a pipeline plan from Afghanistan down through Iraq. Let's have Don chime in. Maybe he knows more about the subject. Don, why did George Bush go into the Iraqi war in 2003, according to your perspective?
Because his daddy told him to. His daddy told him that he wanted to get rid of Hussein. So he went in under the auspices of trying to shore up Kuwaiti support. And, you know, that was how they went into the war. That's how this fake war.
As far as 9/11 evidence, as far as 9/11 evidence goes, what led us to Iraq?
Weapons of mass destruction. But there were none.
There were some.
What was that?
I said that was an idea. That was basically the excuse. But I'm talking about hard evidence from the towers coming down to us going to war, putting foot soldiers on the ground. What evidence put our guys on the ground is what I was asking. It's never been answered.
That's because there was no evidence. We went into this war because secretly – really, what it is that we need another base. That's why we're in Afghanistan. We need another base because we knew we were losing some of the bases that were around the Russian area, and we want to keep an eye on Russia. So we went to Iraq because Russia was moving out of Afghanistan. I'm sorry, Afghanistan. We went into Afghanistan because we were trying to get out of this. We were trying to make sure that we could.
Is that you, Don?
Yeah, that was me.
Okay,
hold on, Ben. Albert's on the line, okay. And Don, just hold your thought a minute because you have too much background noise. The central U.S. justification for launching the Iraq war was that Saddam Hussein's alleged development of nuclear and biological weapons, and they had purported ties to the Al-Qaeda, and he made his regime a grave and growing threat to the U.S. and the world community. During the lead-up to the war and the aftermath, critics cast doubt on the evidence supporting the rationale. Go ahead. Whoever wants to talk next.
That's what I said.
There was no proof of that.
Well, you know, that still does not explain anything to do with Building 7 coming down in its own footprint and both buildings being pulverized as opposed to tipping over at the hot spot. And
George Bush planned or was on the plans on all of this. He knew these buildings were coming down. He knew that they were going to be exploding in Building 7. He knew that. If this is a ploy to get us, and again, economically back on us, and that's the only way to do it is militarily or agriculturally, which we cannot do because they don't buy our the rest of the world doesn't buy our products, our food products. So he knew that this building was coming down. He knew these pilots were being trained under the eye of our military. So this is, those are the answers to you. And Albert asks that question frequently, too. Albert knows. Those are the answers to those questions.
Yeah, there is no real answer, though. If you say that the pilots were actually the ones that they showed you the pictures of their faces, you can't say that those were the people that flew. There's no evidence.
The point isn't that we got
back on our feet, though.
What was that? How did we get back on our feet?
It didn't get us back on our feet. What was it? $3 trillion that we lost?
But we didn't lose that. Our bomb makers, our Boeings, our Honeywells.
We made a lot of money in war.
They made plenty of money. So those are the constituents of our leaders, no matter what party they are in. Those are the people that pushed. So they made money. Goldman Sachs made money.
I guess I'm one of the weirdos that I value human life more than statistics. And I had some friends that went to war and came back completely different people from what I remembered. And I'm glad that I didn't join the military at the time I was thinking about it, because I don't believe that I would have done the right thing. Now.
So I told you I would have been in Canada for the Vietnam War. I would have been a Canadian citizen by now. So my bags were packed, and I was going to be Parlez-vous Francais and all over those girls. So the bottom line is that humanity is not equal to money, like Citizens United is saying. You know, the Supreme Court is definitely wrong when they say that corporations are people too. Because they're not. And anybody who thinks that is out of their mind, and I don't respect them, and I don't even, you know, I can't even talk to them because they're crazy. You know, this is not a humanitarian proposition. This is an all-money proposition, and the human race is collateral damage. That's all.
And I got to apologize, Jane. I hate bringing up 9/11. But the original topic was basically my idea of our presidencies, and I'm trying to, as a self-proclaimed centrist, I get labeled as a conservative all the time, but I can pick and choose from either side I want. But I want to distance myself from George Bush as being the last Republican that we've had as a president, because I don't consider him any different than Clinton or Obama. I don't understand what made him a Republican conservative, but was allowed to, you know, go along with this whole regime.
But it
hasn't changed.
Okay, that's like I was saying. Well, money. He was able to buy his oil money. You know, he's one of the richest men in America. Period. So his money, his family's money, was the thing that bought him a lot of things that came with the presidency. You know, he was a buffoon, and he was a goofball, and he was probably not as dumb as Trump, but he was just dumb. But he was popular, and he had a famous family with money. So that's how he got there.
I think, sometimes you wonder how people get in office, but back then the Bush family had more political clout than they certainly did in this last election. And they did have money in place and decision makers in place to pull things off. But I do think that inevitably they did kind of screw up in Iraq, because we didn't leave the country in a better place. In fact, Afghanistan is still having lots of mass killing in Kabul also. And I don't think they accomplished their regional goals of oil prosperity and wealth. And see, I don't know how much we control their economy.
So what happens
still.
In Kabul? What happens in Kabul is what the media is allowed to know about. What basically confirmed why we went to Afghanistan was the profits of lithium and copper and, you know, poppy products. You know, we've had a huge infiltration of all this drugs, and people are ODing and dying, and poppies are over there. We know that's where they come from.
Can you guys
we've
hear
also
me?
Had we've also Albert, had a ton
are you
of
leaving?
Electric vehicles.
I think Albert wants to say something.
Sorry.
Go ahead,
Albert. I want to say that, you know, you guys were talking about the war and why we went to war and stuff like that. And I just want to mention that the U.S., and you're talking about these terrorists right now, the Iraq, and right now there's a lot of killing in Afghanistan. And, you know, the U.S. doesn't directly give money to terrorists, but they do give money to people that give money to terrorists. Like the U.S. gives a lot of money to Saudi Arabia, which is, of course, Saudi Arabia is not a terrorist in other places. They are terrorists to their own people, but they do give, Saudi Arabia does give money to terrorist organizations around the Middle East.
Yeah.
So I'm just saying that the U.S. gives a lot of money to other organizations to give money to the terrorists.
Well, as far as the plan of going to war to do certain things, and looking at what the economy's done since then, see, I've looked at Tesla stock for the last 5 years. I think Tesla stock has gone up 385%. And their biggest contribution to our market was electric cars. I see them all over the place now. But in order to have batteries and supply, you have to have lithium, raw lithium, which China started mining lithium just about the same time we started fighting in Afghanistan. So it's really interesting to figure out where the lithium goes and what we buy after that and where it comes from. And I think there was a lot of insider trading going on in the last two administrations planning these things.
They have the lithium batteries, but also the nickel alloy, but the lithium is more popular.
I have a question. If we were bystanders during the original Iranian-Iraq war from 1980 to 1990, and they both lost a half a million on each side, and we supplied Saddam Hussein with weapons because he was a lesser threat to us, and then we go in there 20 years later and destroy the country, what does that make America? Are we just we're not nation building or democracy building. We're kind of destroying things.
Well, it's on the petrodollar.
Ding,
ding, ding, ding. You're the winner.
I'm strong supporter of Israel, but the Middle East cannot find peace.
The U.S. supported Saddam, no problem. When the Iraq was fighting Iran, but you know, once he went against the petrodollar, all bets were off.
Well, you can't show peace with violence. So I'm sure that the people that look at us from the outsider's point of view, they look at America as the ones that fly over you and blow everything up. But from where we're standing, it's like, yeah, we want to show these people some values, some peace. It's crazy from our point of view what they're doing. So everybody's, you know, you'll get 60% of the population voting for, yeah, go drop bombs on these buttheads over here. But from their point of view, it's like, we're all the ones that drop the bombs. So it's hard to have common ground and show somebody how to be peaceful when you have to blow them up first.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, our military industrial complex does employ a lot of Americans. So, you know, I guess they can say, they could try to blame all of us. But, yeah, and there are a lot of employees, maybe like your brothers or your cousin or your friend works for the military somehow.
Right.
It's just kind of hard to say if Afghanistan will ever be stable. And they've had several killings in their capital, and I just don't think that it's ever going to be stable. And Iraq, the jury's still out.
Well, you guys should look into that. Do some Googling and look at the lithium mining that China was doing ever since like 2004, I think it was. It's really interesting because after that, we started getting all these electric cars, fully electric cars, which is old, old technology. It's almost 100-year-old technology, but it's been suppressed by the oil market. But as soon as major lithium mining was brought in, we could bring the DC power cars back, which is happening like crazy. I mean, Nissan, Ford, Chevy, they're all doing electric cars now, but Tesla was kind of a starting point. It was like the match that lit the fire. And Tesla
was
buddies with
Obama. Who's buying those cars?
I see them every single day. I see probably 15 of them a day at least.
And you know,
I was thinking electric cars were
a lot more popular, you know. And they could have brought it over here, but, you know, petrodollar, you know, it really. But, I mean, if you guys ever seen the movie on Who Killed the Electric Car, there's a lot of info on there. And also the second movie, which is The Revenge of the Electric Car.
Yeah, I want to throw, we have 4 minutes left, and I want to read 2 paragraphs to you guys real quick. After the May 2011 death of Osama bin Laden in Pakistan, many prominent Afghan figures were assassinated. Afghan-Pakistani border skirmishes intensified to many larger-scale attacks by the Pakistani-based Haqqani, it's H-A-Q-Q-A-N-E, network. The U.S. blamed rogue elements within the Pakistan government for increased attacks. The U.S. government spends tens of billions of dollars on development aid over 15 years and over $1 trillion of military expenses during the same period. Corruption by Western defense contractors and associated Afghans reach unprecedented levels of the country, blah, blah, blah. The main point is that since Karzai left office in 2014, the Afghan president Ashraf Ghani became president, the U.S. war in Afghanistan was officially over. However, U.S.-led NATO troops have remained there, and since 2001, over 90,000 directly related war deaths and 100,000 injuries. So now it's more of a conquest of border skirmishes and loyalties, and it just doesn't seem to ever end. Okay, you each got 30 seconds to make a conclusion. We're going to get cut off. We're getting cut off in 2 minutes, so someone make a conclusion.
Thanks because of all of that, you know, taking Saddam out of Iraq. Now we have wonderful bases around Iraq that surround Iran, so and the next conquest will be Iran in the next future. That's what I'm looking at.
I agree. How about you, Ben?
Well, we still have our electric cars that we can pay for, so we'll see. I challenge you guys to check it out for yourself, though. Look at the when China started mining in Afghanistan. It really kind of lines up when we started fighting. So seems like we were the security service for the mining operation as far as other things.
I'll look it up. I think in my geopolitical brain, I think that the United States has many strongholds all over the world. It would be hard to have us defeated, but I think every country can inevitably crumble, and we have to watch especially where we lay roots in the Middle East and how it's going to affect our future. You guys got 1 minute still. Okay, I hope to talk to you all next week. Go ahead, Ben.
Also, look at Alexander Fraser Tytler on democracy. Google that. Alexander Fraser Tytler on democracy and read the whole